thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wole here with Will T and Ray Jeezy. You know, pass the fellas in. You know, we do our social distancing thing. What's going on, fellas?
What's up?
What's up? I'm talking about,
good,
bro.
Man, how you?
We're good, man. We're good. You know, we got a jam-packed show. You know what I mean? As always, we're going to cue in our guests eventually. But make sure you know that we're part of the Sports Journey team. Make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sports content, especially for your DMV special sports teams. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. And hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Everybody catching the games? Will T. Ray, y'all catching the games? The NBA games, the playoff games?
Of course.
I mean, they lit, man.
Of course.
Yeah, watching this Rockets game right now.
What? What, bro? Hey, Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
All right, here's what we have on tap. Sports Journey's Washington football team insider Lake Lewis will join the show to talk about the Washington football team hiring Jason Wright as the new team president. At 8:20, we'll talk about Washington football team quarterback Alex Smith coming off the pup list. Finally, at 8:40, we'll talk about the beginning of the NBA playoffs. But first, right now, we have former USA Today senior Washington football team reporter and current Sports Journey's Washington football team insider, Lake Lewis Jr. on the line. What's up, Lake?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
We're good. You know what I'm saying? Welcome
doing
again
good.
To the...
How about yourself, man?
I'm good, man. Just sitting back watching all these breaking stories, you know? Just... seeing how the team's doing things.
I know, right? All right. So, Lake, on Monday, the Washington football team announced the hiring of new team president Jason Wright. Wright is the first black team president in the NFL. What can you tell us about Jason Wright?
I mean, yeah, you know, he's a former player, played, 8 years, and, you know, he wasn't a star by any means, but, you know, anybody that plays at the professional level is good, you know, no matter how you cut it. But he was a guy that, you know, bounced around a couple teams, was on a couple practice squads as well. And I think by being in those situations, a lot of times, you know, when you're not a star player, you get a chance to talk to some people in the building that maybe the stars don't even talk to, you know. And I think he got a good understanding of how teams should be run and also how they may not need to be ran. So I like the move for the Redskins because it's or from the Washington football team. You know, it's a step out the box for them, literally. It's so much a step out the box. It's a box that no other team has ever opened up. And, you know, you have to give them credit for that, you know, bringing in the first African-American team president in the NFL, in NFL's history. And on top of that, today he's not just – you know, happen to be black, but he's also the youngest team president in the league. So you got to give them credit. I know a lot of people were saying that this was a token hire. Listen, man, I tweeted out yesterday that if you give us tokens opportunities, sometimes we bring back big coins for you. If we're given those opportunities, and especially when we're qualified, and this guy's qualified for this job.
Well, I know you had some questions about that, Will. I want to put Will out there.
Lake, I have a question for you. Bruce Allen, who was the former team president of Washington football team, what was his responsibilities within that building?
I mean, basically, Bruce Allen to me was a face. He was a guy that had a link to the past with his father, George Allen, you know, who was a great coach, you know, for Washington, and took him to the Super Bowl, you know, back in, 1972? So he to me was kind of like a figurehead to bring back the alumni and just, you know, link the team to their past. But the problem with that is that when you keep shoveling the past out, that means you have nothing going on currently. And, you know, for what they're doing now, this is something that is not a link to the past in any way, shape or form. This is, you know, this is a step in the modern age and you're doing it with a diverse group. So I think this makes Bruce Allen's role look even more shady when you think about it.
Well, okay, let me ask this question another way. Bruce Allen was the president of the team. So he did, so he was responsible for the business side and the football side, correct? So all of that laid under his, was under his command, correct?
It did, actually. Bruce Allen was kind of the face of the red of the Washington football team. I mean, he literally,
okay.
I mean, that's going to be, but no, he literally was doing everything. And that was hence the problem. You know, right now under Jason Wright's not going to do anything with the football side of stuff, meaning, you know, the X's and O's and things like that. That's Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera is handling that, and Kyle Smith. So Doug Williams. So they're not, they're not putting all of this on Jason Wright's plate. He's going to be the guy that ushers in, you know, the marketing, even though they do have a marketing person in Terry Bateman. They'll all report to Jason Wright. He's going to basically be handling the day-to-day operations of Washington outside of football.
Okay. So, all right, because I was a little bit confused. And now I understand that Jason Wright has the title of president and he'll be handling the business operations. Around this time last year, Washington had someone in Brian LaFemina who was the COO of the team, correct? And he handled all of the business operations side, correct?
Actually, Brian LaFemina was pretty much just there to handle marketing. He didn't trump Bruce Allen. So hopefully that explains it, because it was Dan Snyder and then Bruce Allen in that pecking order. Right now, it's going to be Dan Snyder, Jason Wright, and Ron Rivera adjacent to each other, side by side, in that pecking order. One handles football, the other one handles strictly business. And, you know, and that's the way it should be. And that's normally how the great organizations set it up. They let their coaches handle X's and O's, players, who they want drafted, you know, and then they have a person that handles the business side of things. Like in New England, Belichick handles all of football, and then they have someone else with the son of Bob Kraft handling the marketing and the day-to-day operations.
So is it fair to say that now there's more of a traditional structure within the front office opposed to years past, or how it had been previously with Washington with Bruce Allen and before him, I forgot the guy who was before him, Vinny Serrato. So is it more of a traditional structure now opposed to what it has been previously? So I'm just trying to get some distinction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely more. And this is the way it should be done. I mean, normally the pecking order goes owner, general manager, or you might have team president, general manager, then coach. Mm-hmm. But some coaches have that much authority. You know, like I said, Bill Belichick comes to mind. You know, in San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan does have a lot of say, but you have John Lynch, who's the GM, but they actually work side by side. So there's no pecking order outside of the owner, and then you have those two gentlemen, and that's what Washington's trying to duplicate here.
You're listening to the Urban Sports.
No, I was a little bit confused. Go ahead, Wally.
Marie, thank you. Appreciate you, OT. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene now, part of Sports Journey right now. We're rapping with Sports Journey's Washington football team inside of Lake Lewis Jr. Now, OT, you have the floor.
For me, I was a little bit confused when they said team president Jason Wright, and then I look at the responsibilities of the previous team president. Those other team presidents, they also had, I guess, final say over all of the football operations in addition to the business operations.
Yeah, no, that's not going to be the case there. Like I said, Ron Rivera is going to be responsible for football decisions. And Jason Wright, you know, and don't get me wrong, he's going to work, they're going to work with each other. Mm-hmm. But the final say will fall at the feet of Ron Rivera for football stuff,
mm-hmm.
and business operations side will be Jason Wright.
And isn't that what fans have always wanted, though? Like, to be honest with you, like an actual front office that is run the way other NFL front offices have been worked in the past and successful ones in the past?
Absolutely. That's how it should be. I mean, you know, you have situations, not just in pro football, but in pro basketball where, you know, know, look, just recently we saw, you know, the Last Dance, you know, mm-hmm. showing the Bulls. And it showed, despite their dominance in their six championships and the greatest player of all time, sorry, Wally, you know, you know, it also showed how egos get involved and people want their say. Jerry Krause wanted things done his way. Phil Jackson wanted it that way. And that was the discontent that broke up a dynasty, you mm-hmm. know, where they didn't get a chance to defend their title. You don't want that. You want everybody to be in harmony with each other in unison. And I think what Washington's done here is something that they really haven't done, probably going back to the days of Joe Gibbs and Bobby Bethard. You know, you have to go back to where a coach and a GM worked well together. Mm-hmm. And they had some discontent, too, amongst them. But most by and large, they worked well together. Hence, that's why they got four Super Bowls. Charlie Cashley was part of that as well.
Ray?
Hey, what's up, Blake? It's Ray. Good to talk to you, brother. One question. First of all, I want to point out that this hire is not just a blessing because he's African-American, but in my opinion, it's also because he's such an advocate for the African-American community at large. We're not just talking about the NFL community. We're talking about this is somebody who really represents, you know, his community around the world and for numerous causes. But with the fan base having such, a large number of African-Americans and some, you know, obviously some fans leaving because of the name change, do you think that this brings fans back and even adds new fans to the franchise?
Oh, it's definitely going to bring fans back. I mean, this is a move that has never been done in history, not mm-hmm. just from this team, but any team in the NFL. So for anyone to say that, you know, this was, again, a token hire or a lip service type of hire, that's bull because it's never been done before. This was a bold, gutsy hire that, let's face it, if this hire doesn't work, It's a bad look for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't make a move like this unless you expect it to succeed. And again, Jason Wright is a qualified brother. I mean, you get the brother, he's a qualified man, you know? And that's what we were all looking for. All we ever wanted was for this team to move out the way of its own shadow, which was a bad casting shadow, and do something right. And they've hired Julie Donaldson to head over the media. She's a female. That's never been done before in the NFL. They have a Hispanic head coach, first ever in the NFL. It's his second go-round, of course, but he's still the only first ever Hispanic coach. They have an African-American quarterback. They have an African-American female coach on this roster, on this team. So Washington's leading the charge, man, in diversity hires. And I don't care, I tweeted this out. I don't care how it's happened. The fact of the matter is it has happened. And a lot of times we may not be the first choice or the second or third choice, but that doesn't mean we weren't the best choice. We just need a chance to prove it. And Jason Wright's going to get that chance to bring back a story franchise that's been god-awful over the last.
Hello, late? Did we lose late?
I think we lost.
Yeah, I had some good stuff to say too, man. You there?
I'm there. Cool.
Okay, you scared, brother? You had some good stuff. Hey, like I want to tap into what you just said though. You mentioned all the individuals. You mentioned Julie Donaldson, Jennifer King, obviously Dwayne Haskins. But would you say, like, in terms of the NFL organizations out there, the teams and organizations, would this team be probably the most representative in terms of quality, in terms of what they're doing in the front office and in the team, in terms of what you're referring to and having a vast variety of, you know, folks in these positions?
Yeah, I mean, this organization has gone from being a team that had a racist name to some, that was mocking some, that was really pushing the good old boy theme for a long time. So now the trend-setting organization in all of pro sports overnight. I mean, you can't take that with a grain of salt. I mean, this is real. This is something that has changed the complexion of hiring you know, amongst sports, not just the NFL. I mean, this is basically what the Rooney Rule was supposed to be about.
Mm.
You interview people of color, you interview, you know, females, and you get a chance to hear them and what their visions are and see if they're good enough. And a lot of times I've said this, you'd be surprised what you might find if you give them an opportunity just to interview.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you have those opportunities, look at what's happening. Washington's leading the way. And I couldn't be more proud, man. You know, it's the team that I cover. I've covered for a while. I've seen a lot of nonsense going up in that building. And a lot of things happen that were frankly, they were embarrassing. And I was sad to say I covered and be a part of it, because I got friends and family that would get on me like, how can you cover that mess, man? And it was tough.
Mm.
But you know what? Now, to be able to say, I'm going to see some light faces. I'm going to be able to see different genders. I'm going to see diversity and where the world should actually work and look.
Mm.
This is exciting. And it's right here in the nation's capital, too, man. If this leads the way for everything. So, you know, hail to Washington for that. How can I say that?
Hey, like, man, thanks for being on, man. Is there anything you would like to add, my man?
Nah, just, you know, you guys, I'm glad you guys are part of the network. And, you know, keep doing your thing. The boxing interview was awesome.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
And again, you know, I like to practice what I preach, man. I always say, being in the position that I'm in, I didn't have a lot of I didn't have a lot of people to show me how things were done. I kind of had to figure this out on my own. And, you know, I'm proud that I did build something up with my own hands, but I couldn't take it to where I wanted to take it until I had the right people be part of it. And yeah, there's a makeup of more of my own faces that part of my business. But you know what? Each person reached out to me. I got to know you guys and see that you're serious about stuff. And good quality people at the end of the day. So it's just time to roll, man, and take this thing even further.
Like, you know, I appreciate you, my man. Hey, how can folks catch you on social media?
Just check me out on Twitter at Lake Lewis Jr., on Instagram, Facebook, Lake Lewis Jr., and then, of course, Sports Journey, sportsjourney.com. And then sportsjourney.com on social media as well.
Okay. Well, Lake, man, appreciate you, man. You have a blessed one. We're going to talk to you soon, all right?
I appreciate it, and I'm sorry if the sound was muffled. You know, I'm in my car driving back
still
home after getting some business done, so it helps everybody. So,
oh, man.
I appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Hey, no problem, man. It still works, man. It still sounds good, man. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care. All right. Alex Smith has made it all the way back. We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy on SportsJourney.com. on Sunday after a grueling process coming back from a nasty knee injury. Washington football team quarterback Alex Smith was taken off the physically unable to perform list, meaning he is physically ready to continue his football journey. Are you surprised? I'm about to patch you guys in. Are you surprised that he made it all the way back?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
After that ESPN thing, right?
Making it back. Yeah, after seeing, you know, what it was, the Project 11 mm-hmm. special that he had on, that he did with ESPN, mm-hmm. and just seeing how gruesome that injury was in the 17 surgeries, I thought that it would take him, I didn't think that he would be able to pass a physical.
Yeah, me either.
To get on the field. But 2 years, what, 2 years later, he's off the PUP list. He has the ability to practice, and he, from my understanding, he'll compete for the starting position mm-hmm. if that's possible. It's a blessing.
Yeah.
It's a blessing. It's a testament to his will and his hard work. So, you know, no matter what happens for Alex Smith from here on out, just for him getting to this point is a major milestone. It's something that he should be congratulated and be admired for his determination and will.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think everything you heard about Alex Smith prior to the injury, you know, when he came to this team, you know, was he's a leader, he was a hard worker, he was determined. I think it's all true, right? I mean, just by watching this process, because you can tell, like, any individual who's dealt with this, man, they get to the woe is me, you know, approach. And I'm sure he was at that state too. I'm not going to say like he wasn't, but to uplift himself and to go through that process and to like have a dream and have a goal and say, you know what, I'm going to make it back. Even when everybody else is doubting me, you know, I'm going to make it back. I'm going to defy the odds. And to do that and to accomplish it, to get to this point. You know what I mean? It's amazing to me to get to this point where he can actually play football. You know what I mean? Like, that's thinkable. That's amazing.
All right. So let's look ahead
mm-hmm.
A little bit. You know, we know that Dwayne Haskins was the quarterback at the end of last season.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Smith, I still believe he has two more years left on his contract. And then you also have Kyle Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, do you think that Alex Smith will have a legitimate shot to make this team out of training camp?
Yes, and the primary reason is because Ron Rivera just really seems to be strong about implementing his culture and putting his stamp on this organization and on this team and on this roster. So I believe that it's fair game. He pretty much said, in not so many words, I'm not committed to any quarterback right now. Dwayne has the opportunity to start, and he'll get a fair shot through training camp. The coaches will evaluate, but he never committed to him.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, you bring in a veteran who clearly shows toughness in coming back from this horrific injury. I absolutely think he has a chance, and I do think he could be beneficial for Dwayne Haskins moving forward in his growth. Dwayne Haskins is already motivated, as evidenced by his body, as evidenced by just the work he's put in. So I think you can actually build on that momentum for this young man and bringing in a veteran who was a number one overall pick, who's played in big games, who's played for winning organizations, played winning football, played for some good coaches. Yes, I think it's a great opportunity for Alex Smith.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's a great opportunity for Alex Smith. I think it's a great opportunity for Dwayne Haskins, like Ray said. I mean, it's a guy that, you know, even when Kaepernick took his spot, you know, he didn't complain. You know, he was still, from all reports, still willing to help Cap, you know what I mean, become a better quarterback. So he's just a classy dude, you know what I mean? That's just in his DNA. And he's good, like Ray said, like he's going to get to learn from Alex Smith now, being, you know, seeing him in practice, seeing his practice habits, seeing what he does on the field. Because if anything, we can all say, regardless of what you think about Alex Smith as an actual quarterback, you know, he's a winner, and he knows, you know how he knows how to make winning plays, and because he's helped this team win multiple games. So we look at Alex Smith, man, he's nothing but a motivator. And also, if you got to look at anything, and it's not just, you know, Dwayne Haskins, all the players out there who are trying to, you know, compete for a job or trying to make the team, or, you know what I mean, or they feel like, you know, practice is kicking their ass or whatnot. Like, you look at Alex Smith, you have no excuses, bro. Like, real talk, you have no excuses in anything. Like, dude beat death. You know what I'm saying? Dude beat death. Dude beat a situation where his career was, you know, if many stated his career was over. He beat that too. So, like when you're on that practice field, you have no excuse to not to show yourself. Like, you can't say I'm tired. Like, I don't want to hear that, because this dude right there then shows you what hard work and dedication is all about.
Yeah, he has. I mean, and on top of that, once he's done playing in NFL, he definitely has a second career as a motivational speaker.
Real talk.
I would imagine companies and other NFL organizations will be, or other sports organizations in general, just be reaching out to him and trying to, you know, have conversations with him, and then have him in to talk to their team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they should.
Hey, can I be real?
Go ahead.
Because I said on the other show, and Wole, you did too, and that's the joys of, you know, the internet.
Mm-hmm.
If the information is here permanently.
Yeah.
We both said a few weeks ago on the other show that we didn't think it was possible for him to come back.
I didn't think so. Real talk.
And we also, I'm just throwing out that we also mentioned that, you know, even if he does come back and he's clear to play football, that we didn't think he was going to be on the field. But just watching him is what changed my opinion. I just want to indicate what changed my stance. I want to make sure I highlight that, because I don't want to be somebody who contradicts what I say.
Oh yeah.
But I'm really shocked. I'm a little nervous for him personally.
I don't think
it's something I would do if it were me. I would probably be like, you know what? I'm just glad that I can be physically active and I can enjoy my family. But yeah, just throwing that out there, man.
No, and that's the thing. I think you bring a valid point too, Ray. To this point, like, yeah, he's done everything it takes to get on the field in terms of what medically they say he can do, football activities, but everything changes once you get hit. Like, I'm still concerned about, you know, if he takes a hit. Like, I don't know how his body's going to react. You know what I'm saying? Will, to you, like, is that your concern too? Like, once he gets on the field, if he does get on the field?
Yeah, that's my concern. Because look, if there was a preseason and he was clear,
exactly,
he would have the opportunity to take a hit during the preseason, right? Where if not, you know, where they're playing, where there's something on the line, but guys aren't playing as hard.
Mm-hmm.
During the regular season game, God forbid something happens to Dwayne Haskins, and if Alex Smith is the backup over Kyle Allen, he has to come in, take a live snap. How is it going to be that first time dropping back and actually taking that hit?
Yeah.
You know, how will he respond?
Mm-hmm.
How will his mentally and physically? So that's my one. That's my chief concern for him. You know, I think I'm in the agreement with Ray. You know, I would have worked something out with a team where I said, hey, I want to come back. I just want to get one celebratory snap where I can just take the ball and kneel it down, and then I'm retiring.
I like it. I mean,
that'd be good.
Yeah, I agree. I do. I mean, I'm on that side too, but it's like, yo, can you really even doubt this dude now? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because he got to this point.
Look at all he's overcome in his career. You know, he started out, people thought he was going to be a bust.
Yeah.
Because of his play the first, 5 or 6 years of his career. Then when Jim Harbaugh came in, it just, you know, his trajectory just totally went up, you know. Bench for Colin Kaepernick, traded to Kansas City, played well. It was bench for Patrick Mahomes, then comes to D.C., doesn't play so well, gets injured, and then comes all the way back from this injury. You know, he's just a testament to grit and resolve.
Mm-hmm. No, he is. And I think that, you know, everyone should root for Alex Smith, regardless of who you like as your quarterback or whatever on this team. Like, everybody should root for Alex Smith. Like, he has that story. Like, it's a really good, positive story. But in terms of, like, football, his obstacles, you know, like you mentioned, like we all mentioned him taking that hit, right? So if he gets on the field. Another thing is that, you know, he was based on being a mobile quarterback. You know, I don't think I'm, you know, jumping the gun to say, like, he's not going to be as mobile as he was before. Like, that's going to hinder his game.
It will. Mm-hmm. You know, once he gets, you know, when there's an opportunity for it, when the play breaks down and he has to extend the play outside of the pocket, how is he going to respond?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another part. Just, you know, the rush coming in the pocket, and then when he, you know, if he has to get outside of the pocket and make a play with his feet and his arm.
So yeah.
Like I said, it's an amazing story. This is an excellent milestone. But I'm concerned, you know, I'm just concerned for his well-being in the future.
So you think, I'm with you. No, go, Wilton. I'm sorry, I think I cut you off.
No, but they also, you know, having been someone that's had multiple surgeries and injured multiple parts of their body, once you do go through the rehab situation, usually that part of your body is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the chances of him re-injuring it, you know, while it's still there, that may not be as high, but, you know, I'm still cautious for him.
Yeah, and it's just, it's more mental. I agree with you. It's like more mental than anything. They tell you it's strong, and it's like you believe it. I mean, like you truly don't believe it because it's mental. Like you're like, all right, because you don't want to have that same injury again. But you're right though. It is if you rehab correctly, it is stronger. Like I totally agree. But do you think Dwayne Haskins should be feeling pressure, or should he just feel like, you know what, it's still my job?
I'll let Ray take this one first.
I just want to say that when you have Alex Smith as your teammate now,
mm-hmm.
considering what he went through, when you have Adrian Peterson as your teammate, considering how great he is, first of all, and mm-hmm. also the injury that he came back from, that ACL injury, which he came back faster than, I want to say, any other player in NFL history. I could be wrong, but
to be productive,
not the fastest, it was up there.
To be productive and to be productive, you're right, and to be productive.
I mean, yeah, yeah. Right. I feel as though you really need to tap into those resources. So Dwayne Haskins should have no negative feelings, no concern, just admiration for what Alex Smith has done, and saying, "Hey, how can I pick your brain? How can I become better? Move forward." Because even if, again, he outplays you and gets on the field, it's not a bad thing. Dwayne is very confident in himself. He's cocky, really, more than confident. but again, I'm hoping that having a older veteran quarterback, again, who succeeded and also overcome such adversity, will be a humbling experience for him, and not one where he tries to, you know, compete, even though I know to some degree you are in a competition.
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying. Like, I feel as though he could mature through this process.
Yeah. I mean, basically just do him. Yeah, Will, did you have something to say, Will?
No. I think that's a good sentiment that you pointed out, Ray, but what happens when or if Dwayne Haskins doesn't play to the level that the front office and Ron Rivera are happy with? Do they say, okay, let's throw Kyle Allen in, or do they say, okay, let's give Alex Smith another opportunity. Let's give Alex Smith an opportunity. Let's give him a shot. And would the owner be willing to allow that to happen?
Yeah, I don't think the owner has any.
A couple questions.
That's a good question, though. That's a good question. Well, the owner, because this is the young quarterback, the guy that he hopes to be the franchise quarterback. Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know, to be honest.
Come on, man. We talking about all this change.
Oh, believe me, I have a good idea.
Now we're questioning, would the owner let that happen? By all indications,
it will. Yeah, I know.
He ain't got no choice.
He got no choice. Exactly.
He's making move after move, from Julie Donaldson to the right hire. He's making moves to change that culture. He is trying harder than ever. From a non-football standpoint, so I feel as though it's a no-brainer on this one.
I don't think that's a no-brainer. We've seen owners. Let's look at Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones brought in Bill Parcells, told Bill Parcells.
That's different, though. But I get
everything
you,
football related is yours.
Yeah.
You make the final decision. But ultimately, what did we see happen towards the end?
But he wasn't.
We saw Jerry Jones continuously creep and want his voice louder and louder and have more input into what he wanted to see on the field. And that's perfectly normal.
Yeah.
If you own the team, you can't tell me if I own the team, my voice isn't going to be heard, and what I want to happen isn't going to happen.
Yeah,
I'm not.
I don't
that.
Know anyone who owns anything would settle for that type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. I just feel like what Ray's referring to. I think both are correct. Don't get it twisted. But I think what Ray's referring to, like, he don't have no leverage in this situation because of public perception.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, he has no leverage. So it's like. And you got, you know, you get rumors of minority owners trying to force him to sell the team. So it's just like, you know what? It's, at the end of the day, it's like he has no leverage to even try to play that route to have that type of image. He's going to have to – he's trying to, from all indication, he's trying to play that role like the best owner in the world, right? That's going to do everything that everybody wants him to do. So at this particular point, I don't think he's going to try to create drama or any type of issue with that. Like, it's almost, to me, it's going to be more hands-off than people have ever seen before.
That's how I feel. I know that as an owner, you definitely have a say-so. Don't get it twisted. Mm. However, the leverage word, that's exactly what came to my mind. Think about this. He could still be voted out. We're not even knee-deep into the civil suit. It's a lot that has to go on. Mm-hmm. This ongoing litigation that, again, details we haven't even heard yet. Mm-hmm. So I feel as though right now, it's not his best interest to meddle in football-related decisions. Just based on his track record as somebody who hasn't done very well. He spent a lot of money but hasn't done well. And then Ron Rivera, you're lucky he stayed. Some people I know would have resigned. I'm telling you, man. Like, he did not sign up for all this drama, man. And now I feel like we're finally turning the page. So, but Will, you know what? Not gonna say that you're wrong. It could happen, just in case it does. So you don't try to throw it in my face at the time. Because listen, we talk about the Washington football team, man. I'm putting out the disclaimer now. Anything can happen to Washington. I'm not a fan. Lake and Wole are fans, and it's clear.
What?
I'm coming from an objective place.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So listen,
bro.
If it happens, I'm not saying it's out the realm of possibility. If I had to put a percentage on it, I would say that it is about a 40-60 chance. There's a 40% chance he can get involved because, again, he has done this in the past. And the Jerry Jones comparison is a very good one. That's somebody who he measures himself against.
That's true, he does, Marissa.
He's a lot of things. He's somebody who apparently has anxiety when speaking. But that dude is also, behind the scenes, he got some issues, man. again, for real talk, Riggo put that out there years ago. Yeah. And nobody listened until now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to get the proper help. But I think Ron Rivera is not going for it. I think he'll resign before he lets Dan Snyder kind of run a decision. However, Marty Schottenheimer went through that same thing that you just talked
Absolutely.
About. Kind of Bill Parcells. Mike Shanahan went through the same thing.
Mike was evil though. But
so. No, Mike Shanahan definitely had his issues. Don't get it twisted. However, he was told he was given total control.
Yeah, that's true,
I can remember
that's
it like
true.
It was yesterday.
That was true. That's true.
Dan Kelly called that man in the airport. Called that man in the airport when he first arrived. I want to say it was Dallas. He was like, the main reason why I'm taking this job is because I'm getting total control.
Mm.
He didn't say it on record, by the way. He at the time was saying, you know, I'm just getting here, chill out. that's what he indicated right away. Like, this is why I took the job. I was told I'm getting total control, and that didn't happen. So we already know what it is, man.
This is very true.
And those are two far more accomplished coaches
than Ron Rivera.
Marty Schottenheimer and Mike Shanahan. So point that out.
That's true. But, well, I don't know. Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera went to Super Bowl. He went to a Super Bowl. Marty didn't go to Super Bowl.
No.
Yeah. So he's
no. But Marty. But Marty's had some fantastic.
I'm just saying.
More. If we look at Ron Rivera's career thus far, and we look at Marty Schottenheimer's at the same point, I don't think it's.
I got to check
it. Marty Schottenheimer is a far more successful coach.
I got to check because Ron hasn't been a coach in terms compared to Marty. I got to check that. I ain't gonna lie. All right. NBA playoffs.
Okay.
All right. NBA playoffs are in the bubble. We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yeti.
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy on SportsJourney.com, part of the Sports Journey family. The NBA playoffs in the bubble started Monday. The highlight of the day was the Denver Nuggets taking game one, defeating the Utah Jazz in overtime, 135-125. Will T, I know you called the game, man. What did you think about that game, man?
It was one of those. It's definitely one of those NBA classic games that we'll see on that NBA TV 5 or 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the shootout between Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray.
But
ultimately, that's, you know, huh?
Shot making ability, man. It's amazing on both
sides. Yeah, but ultimately, we see, you know, when it comes to the NBA playoffs, it's about a total team opposed to one player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen that happen with Jordan scoring his 63 against Boston when they lost,
mm-hmm.
such as with Donovan Mitchell scoring 59 against the Nuggets in a loss.
That's 57, right? It was 59.
Yeah, I think it was
57. 50. He scored 57.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, 57 in the loss. It's more than one player. And when you're in a 7-game series, and you have the ability to adjust your defense to hone on that one player and possibly allow him to get his, but take away everyone else. It's going to be a tough series for Donovan Mitchell if he doesn't get the help he needs.
Man, it's scary because he had to score 57. He still lost. That's the scary part of it. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, they're going to need Mike Conley Jr. to get back, you know, get back in the bubble. But, like, just watching him, because that was the best I've ever seen Donovan Mitchell play. And I've seen him play well. I'm not saying, like, he's played bad. I've seen him play well. But in terms of shot-making ability and taking the correct shots and setting up his his teammates, you know, for easy shots. Because, you know, he gave Gobert a couple easy chippies, and, you know, he kept dropping the ball. So, you know, when you watched him, he really, like, owned that game. And I felt like if, you know, some of the guys that were, you know, with him had stepped their game up, they would have easily won that game. But, you know, once you leave that door open, you know, you got shot-making ability of killers on the other team. And, like Will, you said it, like Denver has bodies. They have bodies and scorers. They got Michael Porter Jr., who, you know, during the end of the game, he wasn't as hot as he was in the beginning of the game. But you got a young stud like that. We know about Nurkic and what he can bring to the table. And so it's like they have such a deadly squad. And obviously, you mentioned Jamal Murray. He's their clutch dude, man. He just got that clutch gene. And, you know, he can hit shots from any angle. You know, he can finish with either hand, going to the bucket. And it's Jay, you know, in terms of his step back game off the dribble. It's crazy, man. Like, Denver has a scary team, man. Like, it's a scary squad.
It's a scary squad, but then again, you know, who's the one guy that's going to go to the close of game? You know, we know that they have three guys that who can get their own shot towards the end of the game, and Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray, and Djokovic.
Thank you.
And they have three guys. Who,
I said Nurkic. I think I said Nurkic. Didn't I say Nurkic, dog? Did I mess that up? I thought I did.
Both y'all wrong.
I know.
Both y'all wrong.
What is, man. How you say his name, bro?
Djokovic, that's tennis.
Djokovic. Thank you, Djokovic. I knew I messed up too.
Boy, the discrimination is real on this show, man. Don't be from Serbia or Russia. You got the same name as everybody, boy. You Djokovic.
Nurkic. I knew. I hate you. Shut up, dude. I hate you. Shut up. Go ahead, Will, man. Dang,
well, no, so they have three guys, but who's going to be the guy to get the shot? That's the one thing that's yet to be determined. But this is a dangerous. I mean, like you said, Wole. This is a dangerous team.
I love this team, dog. I love this team.
but you know. One of the things that was an advantage for them is home court, because going to Denver and having to play in that high altitude,
mm-hmm.
you take that away and, you know, they're playing in the same, you know, playing within the same three different arenas where there's no home advantage. It's going to be interesting. Like I said, man,
A lot of people going to say this is an asterisk champion, but I said it a long time ago. This is going to be the toughest champ. This will by far be the toughest champion, NBA championship. Whoever wins it.
No, I kind of agree. But to your point about closing, I put that on Jamal Murray. I just think he's the best closer on the squad. Like, I just think that when you want a guy who's a shot maker, who can do a lot off the dribble, like, you want that type of guy. And he can hit shots in difficult angles, you know what I'm saying? Contested shots. Like, you want that guy to mean to take the shot. You know what I mean? Obviously, you want to run plays, you know, depending on what the game, you know, the game and time situation is, you want to run things through the Joker. His nickname is the Joker, Ray, so I can say the Joker. You can run things through the Joker.
It is?
It's a nickname. I think it's a Joker. Barkley calls him the Joker.
Nah, that's Novak, man. Y'all
Barkley calls him Joker, call too.
Novak Djokovic.
Barkley calls him the Joker, okay, too. I swear I'm right. I could be wrong.
Oh, now we
know what?
If you're quoting Barkley, you're trying to save face. That's all
I did. Hey, you know what? I'm scared now, dog.
Call him Jokic, man.
Jokic. You know what? Thank you. Let's go with Jokic. All right, so Jokic, you know, you can run plays through Jokic because Jokic always finds, you know, he's a great playmaker, right? He can find the open player. You know, he can post. But I just feel like you want that assassin killer, man. You go to Jamal Murray, cause that he breaks hearts, man. His game breaks hearts.
He's just not proven yet. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's not proven
yet. Well,
youth and inexperience is going to be the biggest hurdle for Denver right now. They're a young team, and they're still trying to figure out how to win and win consistently and play consistent basketball. We saw glimpses of it last year's playoffs. I mean, they were great. Mm-hmm. Even against Portland, I felt like they played well. It's just they could not close games out. They lost leads. I know the bubble environment is different, and Wole, you've been pointing this out from the very beginning. This no fans thing is a big deal. This could make the difference between, you know, a normal series being 2-2 and a team getting swept. Yeah. Like, for example, Philly might get swept because they can't play at home. Any other time, you know, I would definitely see them taking a couple from Boston because they're going to go home. But in this case, not so much. So that could actually help these young Nuggets not playing a traditional role playoff game, especially in a city like Utah. But the teams are very evenly matched, in my opinion, just, again, based on the inexperience of the Nuggets. But the Nuggets have, in my eyes, just
so much talent,
potential star power for the future, man. And it doesn't compare with Utah. So I say fast forward 2 years from now, this isn't even a discussion because the Nuggets should be much better by then, although I don't think they're going to be able to keep everybody.
Yeah, agreed. I think we're –
yeah,
it goes to Will's
point, 2 years
though.
From now
mm-hmm.
– yeah, 2 years from now, you're going to have to you're already paying Jamal Murray. You're going to have to pay – you're paying Joseph, and then you're going to have to pay Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, and what's his name? Harris is going to be gone. You can't keep Harris. But – it goes to Will's point. I think, Ray, you mentioned, like, the fans. It goes to Will's point about, like, now I'm agreeing with Will when Will was saying this, and he said this during this show, is that this may be, like, the toughest run to win a championship because you don't have that home crowd to intimidate a player or whatnot. Like, could you imagine, like, when you went into, like, as a kid, like, watching the Chicago Bulls, you knew when you went and you played in Chicago, like, folks are going to be shook. Like, one, you're going to be shook by Jordan because, you know, he's coming at you. And secondly, you shook by that fan, like, by that environment. You know, Denver is an example of a great home environment. The Portland Trailblazers, like, their home is a great home environment. Even remember, like think of Sacramento, like, back in the day, like, not being able to play with that crowd. You know, one, if you're the home team, if you're the opposing team, like, how that crowd can get you shook because they get so loud. And you've seen it with the greatest, with the best players getting shook in that environment in the playoff game, you know what I mean? So, like, not having that type of scene, it makes it hard, man. It does. It makes it hard. It makes it because it's all basketball now. It's all basketball.
And then what is the one thing, the one variable that we talk about in the NBA playoffs with a home team? Officiating.
Yeah, that too.
When
yeah,
you're
yeah.
on your home
Good
court,
point.
You get certain calls in a neutral arena. How are the refs going to call the game?
Yeah, we're going to get to the stars.
You're the home team. You're the home. Like, right now, we're watching the game. I'm pretty sure all three of us are watching the game.
Yeah.
And Houston is the home team against.
You ain't watching the game, Ray?
What?
Ray, not watching the game?
I'm watching the Caps now. I'm watching the Caps. I'm a homer, baby. Ed Frankovic was good, bro.
Hey, we'll continue, bro. This is 1 hour with Will.
Yeah,
we'll continue,
so right
though.
Now, even though Houston is beating OKC by 15,
yeah.
You know, they're the home team in the bubble. You know, last 2 minutes, if it was a tight game, Houston would get the call if they were playing in Houston. Now in the bubble, are you gonna get that tight call?
No,
I doubt it.
I doubt it, bro. Know? I doubt
because
it.
Because of there's no home floor advantage.
True. Let's
so, a lot of things to take into consideration.
True that. Let's jump to today's games. Earlier games, a big upset. I mean, I guess it's a big upset. It's a big upset. The AC Orlando Magic defeated the Milwaukee Bucks 122-110. Man, it goes to that point, right? Orlando, they're not playing in Milwaukee, so you know, there's none of that, you know, that crowd, you know, intimidating that team, because they went in there not playing scared. Role players were making buckets. You know what I'm saying? Usually when you're on the road, you know, role players tend to get timid in those type of situations. And you know, you got to a point where Milwaukee did come back. They were getting beat by over, like, I want to say 15. And Milwaukee came back. And they cut the lead to 1, I believe. And then Orlando went back on a run. You don't see that when you're on the road. You know, usually that home team, when they make that run, they close that deal. So, you know, should Milwaukee and Giannis be a little intimidated or scared with this situation?
I'm going to say no, only because Orlando did the same thing last year.
True.
First round, they went to Toronto with Kawhi, and they took that first game. They went on to lose the next 4. In this case, I think they're going to wake Milwaukee up. Now, don't get it twisted. Orlando played a good game. But if you shoot 50% from the field and 40% from 3, which is what they did today, then, of course, you deserve to win the game. So, again, I think that'll wake Milwaukee up. It may be a closer series than originally thought. I still think the Bucks take it in elite, and maybe 6, I'll say.
Will?
I agree with Ray. I think that Milwaukee takes it in 6, but something occurred to me while I was watching that game.
Mm-hmm.
For as great as a regular season that the Giannis. Bucks have had the past 2 years, and Giannis is probably, and deservingly so, will win the MVP and the Defensive Player of the Year. That team isn't a team that's constructed to win a championship because it's all on Giannis. Now, I know, Wally, you'll say that they have what's the other guy?
Middleton?
The All-Star.
Middleton?
Yeah, Chris Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
I know people say they have Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton's an All-Star. But if you think about it, if you look at that team, there's only one guy that can create shots for everyone.
For real, yeah.
Primarily, and that's Giannis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They got Bledsoe.
Bledsoe can too, but he looks for his own shot. He don't really try to create for others. But you're right, though.
You're right. They have generally, yes.
They have George Hill and they have Bledsoe.
He's not
taking anything away from them, nor taking anything away from Chris Middleton. But when we see a championship team, we usually see a team with a 1. Yeah. And a 2, or a team with a 1 and a 1A. And that 1A or that 2 usually can take over for about 4 to 5 games.
True.
During the playoffs when the number 1 guy isn't,
it's off.
You know, when the defense is really fixated on him and they're determined to take him away. I just don't see that this Milwaukee team having that guy that will create shots for himself and others. And, you know, that. You know, as you get further along down the play.
Like, my only thing about that is, like, Middleton has done it before, but I'm not really, like, I'm with you. Like, he's not, like, your typical number 2 scorer where you look at, you know, like, your Batman, Robin, that's, like, an assassin. Like, he's had moments. I don't want to act like he hasn't had that moment. He's had moments. But I'm a lean on Giannis. It's just something about Giannis's game, to me, that is just so, I mean, he can score 30, and that's fine. But if you look at the course of, you know, winning a championship and playing certain teams, like, once they do that wall, once they have the wall, like, it's an issue for them, bro. Like, it's a real issue. And then once they do that, they're real limited. Like, the Bucks are real limited. You know what I mean? When they do that wall. Like, Giannis still had 30-plus, right? Had 17 boards and 30-plus. But, like, that 30-plus came in basically, to me, like, garbage time. Like, the game was pretty much over at that particular juncture when he was starting to get some stats. But, like, once you run the wall, because we've seen it with Boston, Boston did it to him once. Like, once you do that wall and you do it correctly, his game is still limited. Like, that jumper, regardless of how improved people want to say it is, it's slow, it's a set shot, it doesn't work. You know what I mean? And he's not even that confident in it, you can tell. So he's going to have to really, if he wants to shoot threes and consistently wants to do that, then he's going to have to really work on that, or he's going to have to develop a mid-range J, which I believe he should try. Like, just develop a mid-range J and stop trying to worry about shooting threes. Because if he starts to develop a mid-range J, I think Giannis could be even way more dangerous. But I think to a point where now, you know, we're in this era of just trying to shoot threes, that he's just not a great three-point shooter. You know, he's just not that type of guy. I don't care what you want to say he's improved. Like, people say he's improved, this, that, and the other. Because he was just that bad initially. But he, to me, if he wants to take his game to the next level and carry his team to a championship, all he has to do is develop a mid-range J. Forget the three ball. Just develop a mid-range J.
I think Milwaukee could definitely lose this series. Don't get it twisted. I know I picked the Bucks to win at six because they should, just based on how they play defense and what they've achieved as a group. I feel like that's significant. But, again, this environment – with no fear, you know, a guy like Evan Fournier, who I think can go off.
He had a bad game, though.
I would not be shy.
He had a bad game, too.
It's just, we talking about one game, though. I'm just saying he has the ability
to
go off.
No, you're right. No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you.
He has such tremendous range.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we've seen we've seen Austin Rivers score 41 in the bubble.
True.
Austin Rivers, you know, I've been liking him since high school. Yeah. Man, I'm just saying, we've seen in Indiana – remind me his name.
Warren. You talking about Warren?
Warren, right. T.J. Warren scored 61, whatever he scores, 57 points.
51.
He
scored 51, my bad. Okay. So, again, I know this has been pointed out, but this is a totally different environment. It's one that is not as intimidating. And Milwaukee, because they're not the strongest number one in comparison to years past, they could totally lose. And then I'm glad you all are finally seeing the light about Chris Middleton. Y'all was loving him last year.
I remember I mentioned that
I thought Siakam was better. Y'all thought I was crazy.
Siakam made the All-Star team this year.
But anyway, I ain't going to start that argument. I'm just saying, you guys are finally seeing the light on the Bucks. However, they still are a strong team, and they could make a championship run. Not saying they'll win it, but in the Eastern Conference, they do have good size, and again, they have good team chemistry.
All right, real quick.
I'll go a step further. I think if Miami comes out of the first round against the Pacers,
they can beat them.
I think Miami beat Milwaukee in a 7-game series.
They tougher. They play tough defense.
That's my opinion.
They're tough. No, I think I can see that. Like, they're a tough defensive team.
I like Boston.
I think Boston. See, you know what I like about Boston? If for some strange reason, I don't know why they don't, but they don't match up good against Milwaukee.
That's
size. They don't match up against Milwaukee, though.
Something about that. Yeah. They like size.
And I told you this, Ray, for real, real talk. And it's something about, this is my problem with Boston. They play Milwaukee. I think they have to play a particular solid game, almost a clear, I won't say a perfect game, but a solid game in terms of everybody has to do the right thing to win a game. And my problem with Boston, when I watch them, is that I told you, like, Jason Tatum is taking his game to another level. Like, he a dog. After that, he's like a dog. But, like, when you look at Brown, I feel like Brown it competes with Tatum on a low. Like, he'll take wild shots just because he sees that Tatum is taking his game to another level, and they both were kind of like, which one was going to kind of take it, you know what I mean? And you see Tatum going to this level, and Brown takes shots that he shouldn't be taking, that he's not at that ability as a shot maker where Tatum is at. You know what I'm saying? And in the playoff series, you need to take smart shots, especially when you're playing good competition.
You say that to me yesterday.
Yeah.
After you made that comment, man, he turned it on.
Yeah, okay.
Knocking down them open threes.
Open threes are fine, though.
Listen, he helped close that game. Go back and watch it. No, ain't no he helped. He closed that game.
Yeah, I'm not saying
Tatum
that.
Tatum actually was off in the fourth quarter when, remember, Philly made a run.
Yeah.
It was Brown who carried them. You're right in terms of moving forward. If he just plays his role plays his role effectively, he's going to get numbers, and his athletic ability is going to put him in a position to dominate at times.
Yeah, it's
but
not
yeah,
a knock
on. I know what you're saying, but I just don't want people to think you minimize.
No, not at all. No. I think
he's the most effective guy down the stretch.
No,
I know. I'm not. I know what you're saying. I'm just trying to clarify.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, he can. No, he a baller. I want people to understand. He a baller. Like,
I know you love him.
I love Brown's game. I just want him. Like, if he takes smart shots, he easily can get his buckets. Like, he can dominate down the stretch if he like takes the shots that he can take. Like, he's an improved 3-point shooter. He's athletic. He straps, dog. He straps and plays defense. He don't just play defense. He straps. He's an all-around basketball player. I love his game. I'm just like,
you know, for them, for the way Boston runs their sets, the way they play basketball, like, if he can do all that in the system, oh, dog, then they could beat Milwaukee. I won't even, I won't even lie to you. Then they can beat Milwaukee. All right, I want to, like, we'll tell you, I'm going to get to your series real quick before we leave the show, man. Tonight, it's about to start anyway. The Lakers, the L.A. Lakers take on the Portland Trail Blazers. Many pundits, including my boy Will T, believes that the Blazers could, I'm not saying would, but could upset the Lakers. Why are the Blazers so dangerous for the Lakers?
Well, for a couple of things. We've seen, for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. One, the Lakers don't have Avery Bradley and Rajon Rondo.
Very true. Very true.
At the guard position. Those two guys although they aren't the perfect matchup for Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, I think they will provide more resistance than what the Lakers currently have on their roster.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Two, we've seen this Lakers team struggle with teams with dynamic guards. And three, this team had the Portland Trail Blazers had 3 7-footers, and that team and that length and that size matches up. And those 3 7-footers match up very well with the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look from the Lakers' perspective. This is a team that, within the bubble, I have seen little to no outside ability to make outside shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that we routinely saw that bothered the Trailblazers was when guys broke down the defense and then they had to regroup and close out on 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have to do that against a team, it makes, and the way that the Blazers have been scoring, it makes the advantage for the Portland Trailblazers. Not to say that they'll win the series,
yeah,
but I think that they will definitely give them a tough time. And, you know, a tough time, I'm thinking two games that Portland will win and the games will be relatively close.
Okay. Hey, Ray, you Ray, you want to chime in?
I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid on the Blazers. not trying to disrespect anybody, but they play no defense, in my opinion. And when I say that, I mean their team defense, just from what I've seen, is just not very good. Now, if the Lakers don't shoot the ball well, that could offset their defensive challenges. However, you have AD and you have LeBron and you have a CJ McCollum who's injured. I feel as though you put Danny Green on either Dame or McCollum. We already know what Danny Green brings defensively. Danny Green also is streaky, man. He'll find his shot in the playoffs. I believe the Lakers win at 5. I don't even think it's as close as what people are thinking. It's just the Blazers obviously had a hot run here in the bubble. But playoff LeBron is always different, bro. Always.
I mean, for me, Dame. Go ahead, Wiltie. Go ahead. I'll let you go. Dame is like, so one thing about Dame, and I respect Dame, is like once he goes for like gets that 60, that he goes for 60 or goes for 50, it's a problem regardless, right? So and Will is right. I'm real with the way the Lakers have been playing in the bubble. Like I don't think the Lakers are the favorites to win the championship. Honestly, I don't see them really. I can see like the Clippers. I think the Clippers are better than them at this time. I think Denver's better than them at this time.
Told you a long time ago.
Yeah, the Rockets. Shut up. I said the Rockets. To me, the Rockets, if they get Westbrook, they're probably better the way they're playing basketball at this time. But like to this point about the Blazers is that they have to play a particular game because a particular game. They have to be hot pretty much most of the series to beat the Lakers. And because of their defense, to be honest with you, because you got to take something away. Like everything, if you looked at LeBron in the playoffs, right, and some of the weaker teams, stronger teams or whatever, teams that have beaten him, like they've had a defender that can bother LeBron. He may not stop LeBron, but it can annoy LeBron. Like the Warriors with Iguodala, Draymond Green, they threw bodies at him. You looked at San Antonio, with Danny Green, it was Kawhi Leonard, you know, those individuals. I'm even looking at when he played in Orlando back then when they lost to like Dwight Howard and company, you know, it was they threw bigger bodies at him to deter him. They got Dwight in the middle to block shots. They had individuals who could annoy LeBron. May not stop LeBron, but annoy LeBron. When you look at the Blazers, LeBron plays the three. So That tells me Melo's going to probably be checking LeBron most of the game. Or Zach Collins. That's a bad look. Like, that's a bad look regardless. You're not going to deter LeBron. Like, Melo's defense is horrible. Like, it's been horrible in this post in the bubble. And I love Melo.
You can't say no. Since they've been in the bubble, Carmelo, his effort on his defense has been better than I've seen throughout his career.
I've watched. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, bro.
Let's just be honest.
No, I'm being real. Like, I'm talking about this.
We're saying effort.
Effort. Yes.
Good.
I'm not saying effort.
I'm not saying his defense is good. I'm saying his effort. He put far more effort.
I agree with that.
Throughout his career. And I don't think there's anyone who can look at the games objectively and say
he's put effort.
He's put the effort in.
Yeah, I agree.
What we also know is LeBron is very adverse to playing in the post. So if you were to put someone smaller, say a Gary Trent Jr., say a Damian Lillard, on him, I don't necessarily think that it would be a huge mismatch because LeBron is not going to go to the post and truly take advantage.
Well, okay, so if you look at – see, he hasn't been in that situation in the bubble as much. But if you look in the regular season, he has, though. Like, he's gotten smaller people. He's gone the block. Like, they run sets for that. That's what I'm saying. They run sets for that. So it's the thing. Again, it's different, man. I'm just saying, like, this with under – like under with what's the Lakers coach? I'm having a moment right now. What's his name? Vogel. Thank you. They run sets with LeBron to block if he has a smaller dude. You saw that with the Clippers. They had Burt Beverly in the game. They just featured LeBron to block. They featured it. But I don't see Dame checking him. I don't think they'll do that. You know what I'm saying? They will put Zach Collins. They will try to put Zach Collins. And they will try to put Melo on LeBron. And that will be an issue because then how you're going to play screen and roll off of that. Like, how are you going to run screen and roll with AD and LeBron? Like, how are you going to check that? That's another issue because you're going to get layups off of that. You can get layups off of that. So that's the thing. Like, their defense needs to really be clicking for them to really give them a headache in this series. But I'm with you, Will. Like, if Dame and CJ are going, they're going to give them problems. That's real. If they're going consistently, but you got to do that throughout the series, though, which is tough. You know what I'm saying? Because they're jump shooters. They're still jump shooters. So you got to be on seven games or whatever the amount of games you play. You got to be on.
I mean, they're jump shooters, but we know Damian Lillard gets to the bucket.
No, he does, but
off pick and roll.
You know, I agree. He does get to the bucket. He does get to the bucket. But when he does his damage, right, typically he's on that. That J is on. Like, when he's dominating a game, Dame's J is on. Like, if he's just getting layups, it's not the same Dame. But if he's getting that J going, like that Steph range, this Dame range. I don't even want to call it Steph range. That Dame range going, it's a problem throughout, period. Like, Dame is a serious problem. Like, Dame is the most underrated star in the game because Dame is a top five baller easy. But I'm just saying, like, so I agree with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if you get Dame and CJ going, yeah. It's going to be an issue, but that you got to ask for some real consistent play thoroughly in this series to negate that defense.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Damian Lillard. He's done it over the eight games. I mean, he's done it all year.
He's done it throughout his career. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, in a couple minutes, we won't have to talk about it any more further.
Exactly, man.
Get to sit back, watch the game, and, you know, we'll see. You know what happens from there.
You know what, bro? This has been a great show. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And check out the new home of the Urban Sports Scene at sportsjourney.com. Anybody want to have any, you know, last remarks before you watch this great basketball game as we sign off?
Check out the Caps. They might be getting swept tonight.
They're going to be swept. We don't talk about the Caps right now.
Didn't know that was happening?
I knew it was happening, but I didn't care about it. Good, Will T. I want Will T to say something.
You guys are such big.
I was waiting for it, dog.
Hey,
look, I thought about it. Hey, bro, real talk. I thought about it. Like, I really did. Then I was like, man, basketball is kind of lit. Why do I want to be a Debbie Downer? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, why wouldn't we bump basketball for hockey?
I knew you were going to. I was waiting for it.
That's all I want. I mean, hey. We could have easily bumped Alex Smith.
Wait a minute.
You know, we didn't have to talk about Jason Wright.
What? Hey, you know what? You've been
hockey,
listening to
you guys love hockey so much.
Hockey is amazing, bro. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, man, leave us out, big homie.